Angela Cherby, Fred from Radio de Canfesto, here with Gela Rorig, actor of Saul Fia screening competition.
First question I want to ask you is pretty obvious, but how did you manage to live through such an intense experience as shooting this movie? Because it was all on your shoulders, you know, you were always there, it's always you, for 90 plus minutes.
Yeah, the shooting of the movie was the easiest part. That was a redemption to start the shooting. The hard part was to wait until we can start shooting, because there's so much sadness and anger and stress accumulating inside of me for month and month, that I told Laszlo, if you're not going to start the shooting this movie, I'll die. So once he started to shoot, that was a channel to let things out. Mm-hmm. The shooting was already the easier part.
Even if it was done in such a specific way where, I mean, the camera on you, very close to you, very near you, on you basically, so you were forced to be very attentive and very precise.
I was in a certain, you know, state of mind, and there was lots of limitations, you know, because it's not a movie that has a lot of cut.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to go through these choreographics, like you go there and you turn left and right and then you run back, and it's all one scene. I left the camera alone. I'm sure I was aware at the time, so just to make sure I don't look at it. But I wasn't, that didn't bother me one bit, no.
How did you prepare? Mentally, I mean, not physically.
But that's the end. You see, I thought it's going to be hard to prepare, because I wasn't sure how to. But then I found the book. It's an interview with 8 former Zonder commandos, and there's only 20 left in the world right now. And 8 of them decided to speak after decades of not revealing even to their families what they were doing. Out of shame, out of fear, because in the hierarchy of the camp, the way it worked is that you get the survivors, you get the capos, and the very bottom, the most hated and looked down and spitted and despised people were the Sonderkommandos. These people were not rushing to be interviewed, but as they were aging, they understood the importance to let the world finally know, because there was a lot of myth out there what was exactly their role. One day during the preparation, we were doing an improvisation, and I didn't get the role yet. So they told me, you are a Sonderkommando. Describe us one day of yours. What are you doing? From 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., what are you doing? And I spoke an hour and a half, because I read the book. And after an hour and a half talking with this very flat, dry voice, I felt like, I'm done. It's now 6 p.m., I described one of my day, and I looked up, and everyone was crying.
I understand that you're a religious man and you have studied religion.
Yes.
So how did that affect you on this specific film? Or on the contrary, how do you feel that this story can be generalized to other people, other religions and other times, like this time now?
Well, listen.
Sorry, it's a big question.
No, of course it's a big question. But this is not a question that is specific to any religion, you know. Every religious man, no matter what your religion is, you have to deal with this. You know, there's so many unjust, seemingly unjust or really unjust suffering in the world, and how can God allow it, and why the prayers are not answered, or why not earlier, and all those questions. Well, the first thing to say is that God did not invent the Cyclone B. God did not round up the Jews and the Gypsies and the Soviet POWs and the gays, and he did not round up perfectly German mental patients and perfectly German midgets, and he did not butcher and slaughter them, gas them, burn them. We did it, humans, And equally scary is that I don't think we learned one bit of a lesson out of this. I think the cruelty that was performed and exhibited in the Holocaust is all around us today, as much as, if not more. And the frightening thing that you thought, or I thought, or we thought, that now there's a chance to, like, and in the 60s there was this sense of, like, universal human rights. The term of genocide was coined, and people thought crime against humanity, and people thought that we're going to have different standards. But I do not have the slightest optimism or hope that if this would happen again, no matter against what race or minority or whatever, no one would move a finger. But this is not a story of a survival. No one survives. And this is not a story of good and evil either. What we wanted is to bring you to close, as close as possible to the reality. We didn't want to explain. We didn't want to conclude something big. We wanted you to feel it with your guts. We wanted, you know what happened, but do you recognize what happened? This is not a piece of information. I won't be able to get out of the bed in the morning, let alone to pray, if I wouldn't believe fully that God was there with the victims. I can't tell you how, but I believe that every one of those in the gas chamber, they had God on their right. God was holding their hand. You call me crazy, but if I won't believe this, I don't know how I breathe.
You said you read the book in order to be prepared for the movie.
Yeah.
Did you find in this book something that you didn't know?
Yeah.
About the life of camps.
Yeah.
And for
all kind of reasons, personal or family or whatever, I did a lot of readings on this matter from my early teens. At 14 and 16 and all those years, I was frightened and fascinated at the same time of what happened. And then I went to university in Poland, and I spent a lot of days in the camp itself. I spoke Polish, and I moved to Oświęcim, the town in Poland that is next to Auschwitz. I ran to the room, and I visited the camp daily, and I wrote a book about it in my early 20s. So I thought, I'm familiar. No one can tell me anything. And then I read this book, and I realized I know nothing, because this aspect of the Holocaust was not covered by movies. Movies usually narrate you of, you know, being in a ghetto and getting in, and then comes the liberators. But no one dared, for whatever reasons, no one dared to get right in the epicenter. Gas chamber. People, I don't know, they thought it's a taboo, it violates feelings or something, and we thought that it can be done in a very, you know, sensitive way. We are not interested in perversion or obscenity. Mm-hmm. We tried not to show too much. We tried not to compromise or sugarcoat anything. We wanted to show as much as it's adequate to show. And we try to work for a visual language that allows this. So it's kind of foggy, it's on the sides and all that. But when I read this book, every page was new to me. I did not know so many. I can get into the really actual details, and I was like, the more concrete the detail was, the more I felt that this is unbearable. Because it's not an idea, you know. When hatred is an ideology, and it's like, yeah, it's ugly. But when you see these soulless robots telling their own brothers and sisters that it will be all right, it's a shower, and just leave your belongings here, you'll be back. It's the hell of the hills, and all these details were new to me. You know something, and then you watch it on an high-definition TV.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot.
Anytime.
Thank you.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps. Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.